To many, REO Speedwagon are the pioneers of the power ballad. Many of their songs, such as Time for Me to Fly, Take It on the Run, and Keep on Loving You, have a special place in our hearts. And with millions of albums sold over five decades, they continue to roll with the changes. REO will be performing at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater on Saturday, July 1st, and at Summerfest up north in Milwaukee on Thursday, July 6th. And to talk about it all is REO's lead vocalist, songwriter, and musician, Kevin Cronin. Good morning, Kev.
Good morning, David.
I love the history. I got to tell you, I love the history of REO because it all started in Champaign with Neil and Alan at the U of I in 67. But most of the band members over the years hailed from Chicagoland.
Well, I do. I mean, I'm a Chicago boy through and through. I was born on the north side, grew up on the south side when I was, 8 years old, when the White Sox won the pennant in 1959, you know, it seems like eons ago, but for me, you know, as a young kid, I was like right there,
sure.
You know, right playing Little League baseball, and I was number 11, Louis Saparicio, man. That was my,
wow.
You know, yeah, yeah. We used to go to the ballpark and, you know, the old Comiskey.
Yeah.
And you know, for any of your listeners who remember the old Comiskey Park, there was a hot dog stand in left field. And it was part of the wall. So when you were in there getting a hot dog, you were kind of your face was like at field level.
Wow.
And we used to, my buddies and I would go out there, and Minnie Minoso played left field for the White Sox.
Oh,
and
yeah.
we'd be out there between innings when he'd come out. We'd like, hey, Minnie. And to this day, and it's affected me through my whole music career, because Minnie would always turn around and like, you know, smile at us or, you know, give us a thumbs up or say hi or something.
What a thrill.
To this day, it was a huge thrill. And so to this day, if I'm, you know, wherever I am, you know, if someone wants to say hi or something like that, I always, even if I'm not in the mood for it, I remember Minnie and I'm like, hey, if a big leaguer can turn around in the middle of a game and say hello, it's like, okay, I can do that too. So,
it's amazing at a young age how impressionable you are on those things and what you remember for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I got a picture of the 59 Go-Go Sox in my wardrobe case. I mean,
that's
it was a
awesome.
Big part of my identity, for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, and you grew up at Brother Rice High School. I mean, you're a true Chicagoan. And, you know, I know you've talked about this before, but, you know, you were taking guitar lessons at some point. I know you said you didn't know exactly why you were taking them. And then in 64, you saw the Beatles play on Sullivan, and everything changed for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to walk to my guitar lesson with my guitar case, and there would be, you know, carloads of you know, hoodlums who would just, you know, who wanted to kick somebody's butt. And it's like, there's a kid with a musical instrument. Let's get him. And so I would like be, you know, running, jumping fences, throwing my guitar over the fence to avoid, you know, getting my butt kicked on Friday. Ed Sullivan came out on Sunday. On Monday, those same guys that on Friday were chasing me through the neighborhood mm-hmm. wanted to be in a band with me because they saw that's where the girls they changed from liking the, you know, the cool guys with fancy cars to liking the nerdy guys with guitars overnight.
I bet.
Was an amazing transformation.
I bet. And, you know, I know you were you played guitar for many years, and you were trying to find a guitar player and bass player for your own band, and you started this musicians referral service, helping bands look for musicians, helping musicians look for bands, and you got this call and the opportunity to look for a lead singer for a band called REO. How did that all come about?
Well, it was, the Chicago Sun-Times at that time had a musical want-ad section and classified section, but it cost $15 for each want-ad, and I was looking for a guitar player and a bass player, so they wanted to charge me $30. I couldn't take out one ad for two musicians, and mm-hmm. I was like, I don't have $30, so I got the idea to start this kind of musicians referral service, like you say, and And I was getting calls from, you know, and everybody who called was like, oh, we have the greatest band in the world. We're looking for a bass player. And you know, after about a month of this, I'm like, what have I've created a monster here. This is ridiculous. Anybody could tell me anything, right? So I get this call. The guy's telling me, oh, yeah, we have a recording contract with Epic Records.
Right.
You'll get a $200. The guy will get a $200 a week salary. And at the time, I was driving a yellow cab in Chicago, you know,
Wow. Which
I kind of dug. It was kind of
fun. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, but I'm like, so what's the name of this band? And he's like, well, I can't really tell you that because, you know, we're on tour right now. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, and finally, I'm like, you know, I don't think I can help you. And he goes, all right, well, the name of the band is REO Speedwagon. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, wait, I've heard of those guys. They play the Dex Card Wild Goose Circuit, you know? And I'm like, you know what? I've got a guy in my vast library of lead singers.
Yeah.
I've got this one guy. He sings, he plays guitar, he writes songs.
He's perfect.
You know, it was Gary Richrath on the line. Gary's like, yeah, I want to meet this guy. Well, of course, you know, I'd given myself a stellar review.
That's awesome.
Literally, that's how I got the gig. You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a scam, basically. I kind of scammed my way into the group, and I've kept up the masquerade for 45 years.
What exactly is an REO Speedwagon? That was a truck company, like a motor company in the early 20th century, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The REO Speedwagon was a flatbed truck that it was actually originally a fire truck that could, you know, get to the fire quicker than a horse-drawn buggy, and it was kind of prophetic in a way because they were, you know, built to last, you know, they were, mm-hmm. You know, kind of had a, you know, they kind of looked cool, you know, so the name kind of stuck with us. So
yeah, perfect.
Here we are, man. Yeah.
There you
and,
are.
You know, matter of fact, the logo, you know, the famous wing logo
that's
on all of our t-shirts and everything, that was basically the hood ornament from the original Aria. And can you imagine now, they gave us, you know, they signed off on it, gave us permission. They never charged us anything to, you know, to use the name, to use the logo. Can you imagine?
Yeah, you'd be lawyered up today.
In this world today. Oh yeah.
No. That'd be painful.
They welcome us. Every time we play Lansing, they bring an old Speedwagon out there.
And, wow.
You know, I've ridden around in them. So it's
very cool. Yeah, very cool. And I know, you know, your early days, you know, in the very early days, you were much bigger in some cities like Chicago and specifically St. Louis. You were playing like Busch Stadium one night, but then two nights later, you were playing in a bar in the middle of nowhere. It was kind of all over the board in the very beginning.
It was, but which was kind of cool because, you know, it gave bands a chance to make a name for themselves locally and then build it from there. Whereas, you know, today's world, everything is pretty interconnected. So I would think it's a little more difficult for a young band to get a foothold now than it was back in those days. But hey, you know, it's the modern world, and you know, we all kind of hearken back to the, you know, the days that you know, when, you know, when we made it or when we did this or we did that. And you know, the fact is, you know, it's today is today, man. You got to embrace what's going on, and you know, I feel just so fortunate that we're still, people are still buying tickets to come and see
us, of course,
sing and play those songs. And we, you know, we don't take ourselves seriously at all, but we do take what we do seriously, and we know that people are coming to see us, and they want to see something that's not just a bunch of guys resting on what they did in the past. We take the past and make it the present, and you know, we are out there. Our thing is we want people to exceed people's expectations every night, and that's you know, that's somehow we're still able to do it, man. We're still enjoying it, having fun, and you know,
it's fun watching you. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, you talked about a little bit what Minnie Minoso taught you at a young age. And I know when you were touring early, you know, the band wasn't always treated well when you were on the road, depending on who you were touring with. But then you toured with Aerosmith and you said things changed the way you were treated. And it kind of taught you how to treat other bands. And it opened up for you, you know, this level of respect that you had to give, you know, to other people based on what you experienced.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we were the Midwest. We were the perfect opening act for the Midwest because we were really pretty popular, you know, in the heartland. And so when national touring acts would come to the Midwest, they'd pick up REO and we would be the special guests on the tour. Mm-hmm. But we were pretty popular. And so some of these bands would see that we were going over really well and they would basically sabotage us. You know, they'd mess with the sound, you know, turn the lights off on us and stuff. And it was kind of a drag,
yeah,
honestly.
But I don't think so.
But then we toured with Aerosmith, and I'll never forget the first show. Joe Perry walked in the dressing room, introduced himself. They welcomed us into have the after show meal with them and party with them and do the whole thing. And their thing was, I remember Steven Tyler told me that their thing was they wanted us to be as good as possible for the sake of the audience, but it also fired them up that, you know, that we would put the bar at a certain level, and they were so good that they weren't threatened by anybody, but it would inspire them to even play better. And I remember thinking, well, yeah, that's the right, that's
it makes
the
sense.
Right answer there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we always, you know, we always take the Aerosmith route rather than, you know, not to mention any names of the bands who sabotaged us, and I won't, but there
gotcha.
Were plenty of them.
So all of a sudden you have six albums under your belt. You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish. Released in 1978, which, you know, received so much FM radio airplay. 2 million copies, ultimately achieving double platinum status. Was that the album that you finally said, wow, you guys are really on your way?
Well, we felt pretty confident with the songs that we had written for that album. So many of the albums that we made before that, we kind of felt like the record company would assign us a producer, but the producer never really kind of got what we did. And so the records would come out not sounding like us, and we would, it was really frustrating for a number of years. And so that album, we went in and, you know, Gary and I went into this meeting with the big wigs at Epic Records, and we're like, you know, we demanded that either we're going to produce this record or we're not going to go in the studio. You know, we thought we were big shots, right?
Yeah.
And then to our surprise, they were like, okay.
Oh, that's
and
great.
We looked at each other and we were like,
did that just happen?
Well, what do we do? we're just a couple of rock musicians.
Yeah.
Sure enough, we kind of figured it out. So, you can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish was kind of the first record that we all kind of went, all right, yeah, this kind of sounds like us, you know. So it was, and you know, we had Roll with the Changes,
yeah.
Time for Me to Fly. We had some pretty strong material, so it kind of worked.
Oh, I remember slow dancing to Time for Me to Fly at my seventh grade dance in 1979.
It was
a big night for me, Kevin. Big night.
Oh, really? All right. Well, good. That's the idea, you know?
You broke into the mainstream again with High Infidelity, sold more than 9 million copies, Keep on Loving You, Take It on the Run, Don't Let Them Go. There was a transformation of the band a bit to a little bit more popular music rather than harder rock. Was the band just evolving at the time, or was this more of a conscious effort to head in that direction?
No, we've never had any conscious efforts in the history of our band. Everything that we've done has pretty much been some sort of a happy accident, and the High Infidelity record was no exception. I'll never forget that. I kind of woke up in the middle of the night and wrote "Keep on Loving You," if you really pay attention to the lyrics. And verses of that song, it's not a real happy song.
No, and people play it like at weddings and stuff, and I'm thinking to myself sometimes, are you really listening? They were prom themes.
Did you listen to the lyrics to the B section of that first verse? But I mean, you know, but when I played that for the guys, it was like, you know, no, that's not an REO Speedwagon song. And finally, Rich Rath plugged in, you know, a Les Paul to a Marshall stack and got this nasty sound. And I think that his intention was basically to drown me out in the rehearsal hall. But I was like, dude, that's it. That's exactly what this song needed. And so, you know, that's kind of where the you know, we kind of stumbled into something, which is what we always, that's all we ever do. We just kind of stumble our way through, and some, you know, people kind of go, yeah, we dig that. And we're like, all right, cool, we'll do it again.
You know, so many bands hailed from Chicago, and you think about, you know, Styx and Cheap Trick, and I'm assuming they were most likely rivals back in the day, but not today. You guys are all kind of pretty close. You tour together. You've recorded some stuff together. Things are a little different today than they were back then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a, you know, it was a friendly competition, but, you know, it was a good competition. It was healthy, and it still is. I mean, we did a gig with Cheap Trick last weekend, and, you know, we were, you know, just really happy for those guys, man, that they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think,
which you should be in there as well. I mean, I'm looking forward to that day too, man.
I don't know about that, but those guys for sure, you know, earned it, and they were so, you know, they're our buddies. I mean, you know, we love all those. And Styx, I mean, I just heard the other day we've done over 300 shows with Styx.
That's amazing.
And and we're not done. You know, there's talk about you know, going out with them again, you know, sometime soon. And I would love that. I love those guys.
Well, and a few years ago, you did a concert with them to raise money for the affected families of the tornadoes in central Illinois. And that's when Gary joined you guys for Riding the Storm Out. And he passed away last year. And I know that must have been so tough, because I know you had a great relationship over the years. You know, it must have been tough. I mean, he was a founding member. You knew him for a long time.
No, it's still, I mean, his spirit is with us every night. I mean, every song that we play in our set, you know, Gary either wrote, you know, co-produced, played on the records, his stank is all over us, you know, and I've said it before, but it's so true that I learned everything I know about being in a rock band from Gary. I mean, when I joined the band, I was playing the Earl of Old Town in the quiet night in Chicago, you know, I was a folk singer, and you know, to this day, I pretty much channel, Gary through, you know, when I first joined the band, I just watched him and I was like, okay, that's what rock stars are supposed to do. Because Gary was, he was the real deal, you know, through and through. And
cool.
we miss him every day. You know, I'm thankful that I got to know him, and that I wouldn't be where I am today. Our band wouldn't be where we are today without Gary Retraff, for sure.
And it's always a pleasure seeing you guys play. It's just, you guys are always rocking it out and sound just as great as you did 35 years ago, and always enjoy it. And Kev, I must have to say, it's time for me to fly.